Sports Radio 1290. CFRW, Winnipeg. All sports.
Got it inside. And five. Touchdown.
All the time. Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
This is our second year anniversary of being on air in Winnipeg, and we have a jam-packed show for you this morning. Joining us at 10:30, Damian Cristadero from the St. Petersburg Times. He covers the Tampa Bay Lightning. Right on the heels of Damian's interview, Randy Hunt, play-by-play voice of the San Jose Sharks, will be joining us. Coming up at 11:15 this morning, an interview with Chris King, Senior Vice President of NHL Hockey Operations, also better known in these parts as the last captain of the Winnipeg Jets. Well, I guess the previously last captain of the Winnipeg Jets until they're reincarnated in the next, 12 to 18 months.
We hope so.
Okay. And then the final guest coming up at 11:40 this morning, color commentator for the Los Angeles Kings, good friend of this program, Jim Fox, will be joining us.
One of my favorites.
Absolutely.
That was my line.
You're stealing my favorite.
We not have the same favorite, I guess, right?
It's fair.
Those two voices
he was originally your favorite.
Those two voices you're hearing from are my cohorts on this program. To my far left, wearing his standard toque and glasses combination, Richard Pollock.
Drew, Ezra.
The man sitting to my left, wearing his toque and no glasses combination, Ezra Ginsberg.
Hey, Drew, I want to thank you for recommending Eat, Pray, Love.
For the record, I would never do that. Never once would I subject you to that. But Sex and the City 2 was fabulous, wasn't it?
You got a Razzie.
Check, please.
It won an award, but it was an award for being the worst movie ever.
A Razzie, yeah.
No, that movie I was going to say it probably was not that bad.
I'd like to give a shout out to Michael Remus. He's here on time today.
That's right, even early. Michael Remus is over in the other studio operating the R desk. You can join Michael Remus at www.illegalcurve.com. Join in on the live chat there. You know, all the show clips, all the links to the articles we're discussing, some video. Pretty much join Michael Remus over at www.illegalcurve.com.
And, go ahead. I mean, he also is controlling on Facebook. You want to send him a message on Facebook, add us at Facebook. You want to send him a message on Twitter?
At Illegal Curve. On Facebook, it's facebook.com/IllegalCurve.
And if you tweet us, I mean, we might put it on air. We might ask, is it a question? It's a comment. If it's funny, if it's an interesting question for one of our guests, we might throw it in there. So don't hesitate to contact us through those means.
That's right. And, of course, we'll be taking your calls later on in the program at 780-1290. That's 780-1290. Let's start with last night in the NHL. Do a quick rundown of the scores from last night. Look ahead to today's action in the NHL, a couple afternoon games.
Yeah, there's a ton of games today. Yeah. And then next week is Hockey Day in Canada, so there's the outdoor game, too.
There you go. Anyways, starting in New Jersey last night, the New Jersey Devils, briefly, were not the worst team in the NHL statistically. They lost last night on home ice in overtime to the Florida Panthers 4-3.
No, the truth is, guys, the Devils are now a tough team to beat. We
talked about it last week.
Yeah, it's not a joke anymore. Lemaire has this team playing respectable hockey, and they're not the Islanders. The Islanders are I wouldn't even say they're an AHL franchise at this point because they're actually a disgrace. But the Devils are no easy out, and teams are going to play them. They have nothing to lose. They're probably going to trade some of their veteran guys for some draft picks and need to rebuild a little bit moving forward.
Yeah.
But no easy out. I mean, they lost yesterday to a Florida team that's been tougher than people think, but both teams are really non-playoff teams.
In Pittsburgh last night, Buffalo lost to the Pittsburgh Penguins 3-2, but the big story of the game, Evgeny Malkin going out, will be undergoing an MRI later on. He just returned yesterday.
He was in, and then he was out.
And so, yeah.
He's in.
Sinus infection. He finally came back, and then he hurt his knee with collision with... Tyler Myers.
Yeah, so they'll be doing an MRI on him. No reports yet as to the results, but that'll come out sometime today or tomorrow.
Without Crosby, without Malkin, I mean, this team right now is just treading water until they can get these guys back. The truth is that they're good enough to, get into the playoffs at any seed and make a run if they want to. If they have a full, healthy roster, which is a fairly big if right now, but if they do have that, I mean, they were my pick to make the Stanley Cup Finals in the Eastern Conference, so I don't doubt their depth. But I do think that moving forward, they do need to add one more forward.
That's right. Big test for... for the Tampa Bay Lightning on home ice last night, and they got walloped by the Washington Capitals 5-2.
Yeah. How long has it been since Alex Ovechkin had a multi-point game?
Do you know that he hasn't,
it's unreal.
He hasn't had a power play goal. He hadn't had a power play goal since Halloween.
That's unbelievable.
Isn't that unbelievable?
That is absolutely
I think it's
unbelievable.
Something like 40 games.
But he's saving it for the playoffs. That's what why he's struggling, is he's saving it for the playoffs.
But let's be real here, guys. The Backstrom Ovechkin line got going yesterday.
Yeah.
And, you know, we could talk all we want here about the, you know, on this show about them being possibly being a one-line team, especially if Semin doesn't get going and, like, you know, got a goal yesterday. But if that line gets going, you can be a one-line team
when that's your line.
That line's firing. You know, yeah. Backstrom gets 4 points yesterday. Ovechkin looks dominant again, fired up, shooting. That Tampa team, you know, we're going to talk to Chris Dodaro about them at 10:30. You can talk about 1-3-1. You can talk about this. But that defense doesn't have the ability to handle Ovechkin and Backstrom night in, night out, if they are motivated, which they clearly were yesterday.
That's right. Big win for the Blue Jackets. Their first, a 3-0 victory in Detroit on the ice at Joe Louis Arena.
Shocker of the night.
Yeah. That's just...
Columbus has been basically the most uninteresting team the entire year, and they've been they're pretty much out of the playoff picture. They're not mathematically out of the playoff picture.
6 points out of the playoff spot right now.
But, you know, Columbus and St. Louis have probably taken the biggest slides in the Western Conference, while, you know, Calgary's been climbing the standings. But
St. Louis has
biggest surprise of the night. I didn't expect that, because Detroit's been playing well.
You never expect Detroit to lose on home ice.
It's one game, but I mean, St. Louis has, you know, more of an injury excuse than Columbus. You know, they have Perron and Oshie and those guys. Columbus just, you know,
they don't have the offense or the defense or the goaltending.
Yeah, exactly.
But
you're right.
In speaking of St. Louis, Edmonton went into St. Louis, and like Edmonton does in most cities they go into, they lose. They lost 5-3 to the Blues in St. Louis last night.
Now, you talk about the developing talent in Edmonton, and that's fine and dandy, but they're pretty awful to watch right now. Their defense is just horrendous. We've talked about it so many times on this show. I mean, they have some young talent. Nice to watch Hall and Eberle and those guys, but At the end of the day, this is a fairly unbearable group to watch. It's a patchwork group. The organization wants them to lose, which they should, because they should want to draft high and draft a defenseman.
That's right, tank hard.
Yeah,
that's what you want to do. And then the game of the night last night in Vancouver, just a fabulous demonstration of the skill and the beauty of this game. Vancouver 4, Chicago 3, not without its controversy, of course, and that being the Christian Ehrhoff goal, where the puck appeared to have crossed outside of the blue line. It was ruled that he kept it in, then he shot and scored.
And Brower's disallowed goal earlier in the game.
That's right,
correct?
Earlier in the game, exactly. So there was certainly some controversy, but as Michael Remus was tweeting at Illegal Curve, last night about the Sedins and their playmaking skills and their passing skills, it was really just a terrific demonstration.
Second to none, Drew, but let's be honest. The first start of that game wasn't either of the Sedins. It was Roberto Luongo with 42 saves.
Absolutely, but I'm just saying that, you know, it was just a very nice...
And for I'm going to interrupt you there. For a Vancouver team that's been pretty dominant, dominating teams like Dallas and Phoenix, you know, they this is a burden that they have to get rid of. I realize they won yesterday, but Chicago went into Vancouver yesterday. Chicago has their number. I mean, regardless of what you say, they went in there into Vancouver. They got 45 shots on the road against Roberto Luongo?
Look, Luongo definitely stole the game for them. There's no disputing that. But, I mean, Vancouver came back. They were down 3-2 in this game, you got to remember, late in the third period, with under 10 minutes to go in the third period.
But to be outshot, Drew,
on home ice by that is inexcusable.
When you're actually trailing for a portion of the game.
That's right. I mean, no disputing that point, but I'm just saying, I mean, Vancouver, it's a good win on home ice, even though they didn't play as well as they should. I mean, they're a better team than Chicago is this year.
2 weeks ago, in, six things we learned this week, said, watch out for Chicago.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's always a Stanley Cup hangover, and it's the second half of the year where that hangover lifts, and then they can take the next step to regaining, you know, the previous cup form.
We can talk about Henrik. I was thinking about this yesterday. I'm going to throw this to you. We're talking about this as much as we want. Henrik Sedin, amazing. We'll glorify the Sedins. And we should, because they're great hockey players. You're in the game 7. It's Vancouver against, you know, Chicago, and you need to pick one center. You picking Taves? You picking Sedin, Ezzy?
That actually is a very good question and a very good comparison, because I might actually go with Sedin.
You might, and I would go with Taves.
And I said I might. I didn't say I would.
Excellent hedging of your bet there, Ezzy.
But I mean, different players.
Totally different player. That's why I asked the question.
Probably, aside from Crosby and Ovechkin, 3-4 as far as the most talented players in the league.
I think Taves turns it on to another gear when it matters most.
I mean, though, we all agree that Vancouver's, you know, the better team, all-around team this year because you know, Chicago lost so many players to free agency and trades. But, I mean, Vancouver, when they play Chicago, they are now, whereas maybe in the last few years they weren't up for those games, now they seem to just be a playoff team. We talked about it last week, too. They seem to be a playoff team and a more complete team this year. I'm not saying that they're going to win the Cup. I wouldn't be surprised, but I don't think the worst they can probably do is get to the Western Conference Finals. They're just too good. They're complete. I mean, I think this is the first time ever the Canucks have been first place in the league overall this late in the season. They've never been this good. I mean, this is like Ottawa Senators in first place. This is how good that team is, the Hossa, Chara, you know, those years.
They're dominating, but let's be real. You know, you look at Chicago, you take Duncan Keith off the defense group. Now, I'm not equating Alex Edler to Duncan Keith, but Alex Edler is damn good, and they just lost their number one defenseman. That's going to be trouble for spending time in your own zone. 42 shots against, I'll tell you right now, 45 shots against, excuse me. One of the reasons for that, there's many reasons for that, but one of the reasons for that is no Alex Edler.
Of course. I mean, you lose top flight minutes.
And we spoke about it last week. I mean, is this something that's going to be a disconcerting for the Vancouver management moving forward?
You got to see what Sammy Salo can bring when he's done with his three-game stint here in Manitoba.
Yesterday.
Two goals and an assist, I think, for the Moose last night.
Really?
In a 3-2 Moose win.
When he plays, it's great, but I mean, you don't know.
You never know if he's going to be in there.
Break a nail tomorrow.
That's right. You absolutely never know.
Sammy Salo has to be the most injury-prone guy over the last 5 years. That is a concern.
And you feel bad for him. I mean, it's not, the injury-prone guys, I mean, it's not like he's not up for a lack of hard work.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll be discussing more of this throughout the show. Looking ahead to today in the NHL. Really, unless you're a masochist and you enjoy watching, Ottawa play New York and Toronto play Buffalo, you can sort of skip the early games on CBC on Hockey Night in Canada this evening. Those are pretty bad games.
What about the afternoon games?
Yeah, afternoon.
I'm saying those are
San Jose Boston. It's all about San Jose Boston.
The afternoon games today: San Jose Boston, the New York Rangers at the Montreal
Canadiens.
That's
a great game right there.
That's a great game. And then tomorrow afternoon, the Habs will play their traditional Sunday matinee of the Super Bowl. They always play They play New Jersey, which is on the calendar looks like
which is a Buzz Killington.
Yeah, which is exactly a Buzz Killington. Good word for that. But the Rangers at the Habs today at 2:00, 1:00 Winnipeg time. And then actually the real game of the night is in Philadelphia. The Dallas Stars with their 30-17-5 record go into Philadelphia. Big test for them against the Flyers, 34-13-5.
They're going to lose 5-3.
Yeah. That's what your bold prediction is?
Mm-hmm.
That's a bold prediction. Somebody write that down so we can remember it next week.
By the way, just to point out the fact that I think last week I said that, was it last week we argued it or 2 weeks ago, as he did, I said that San Jose was going to pass Dallas in the standings. They were 10 points back. Look at the standings right there, Ez. 5 points. He's got it right there. 5 points back.
Hi, Rich.
That's true. That's true, Richie. Maybe he might be onto something. Anyways, let's go to break. Richie, you'll be glad to know your comments about the Islanders are already getting some play on Twitter. An angry tweet followed your comment there.
Oh, that they're
a disgrace. When you call them a disgrace, somebody...
Somebody's going to refute that they're a disgrace?
Yeah.
Bring it on.
Okay, there you go. You got a challenge on the table. When we come back, ownership moves around the NHL and some injuries around the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Nine 15 in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're getting off to a hot start already. The chat room is a-buzzin'. Richard is getting some grief for his comments about the New York Islanders. I'm not sure what the guy is seeing that we're not seeing. It seems to me that a disgrace would be a tame word for describing that franchise right now.
Drew, can you close your game of online backgammon, please? We have a show going on here.
Ezra Ginsberg, ladies and gentlemen. Ezra Ginsberg.
He's here all week.
We're going to Pauly Shore?
Try the veal.
We doing Pauly Shore?
Pauly Shore tickets are flying out, but that's not important for right now.
Tim, are you down for going? It's in April. April 2nd, I think, at Rumors.
Yeah, put me down.
All right.
Son-in-law or Encino Man?
I'm an Encino Man kind of guy myself.
Biodome, jury duty.
Son-in-law was great because it debuted like a really hot Kelly Kapowski. She was more, an older Kelly Kapowski. Yeah.
Was Tiffany Amber?
That's not creepy in the least.
Well, younger than her. So like,
Tiffany Amber Thiessen was in.
Oh yeah, son-in-law. Oh yeah.
First of all, for the record, I'm not sure I'm younger than her.
Tiffany Amber Thiessen.
Remus.
No.
IMDb that.
No, I'd say we'll get Remus to IMDb. I'm guessing she was born in 1977.
Yeah,
really 77.
Ballpark it there.
33. 34 right
at
now.
At least 33, 34.
Older. Huh. Interesting.
It's like in 90210 when they were like 35 in high school.
Let's start with the NHL. And speaking about the New York Islanders again,
there we go.
Their goaltender who's under contract for another 35 years, Rick DiPietro, is out 4 to 6 weeks with with facial and knee injuries after getting knocked out cold by Penguins goaltender Brent Johnson.
I feel bad for him in this one, in all honesty. I mean, he did come out of his net to hit Matt Cook, but I can't stand Matt Cook. Matt Cook is one of the dirtiest players out there. Obviously, basically is, you know, big.
But he was on. He made the all occupation team though.
Yeah, that's true. But a big reason why Savard, you know, very well may not play again. DiPietro comes out of his net. I mean, has a little spat with Cook, and then really in reality, it looked like Brent Johnson called him out. Came all the way down the ice, dodged around the ref, and then, you know, one punched him. And you watch DiPietro fight, and you see, well, he doesn't know how to fight. Well, why would he know how to fight? He's a goalie. But he didn't know how to fight because he didn't protect himself.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought DiPietro used to be one of the goaltenders who would fight somewhat often. This isn't his first fight, if I'm not mistaken. And Remus, you'll look that up for us over there in the R-desk.
Doesn't mean he knows how to fight. Just means he fights. I mean, this is the truth, guys. Ezzy made the point on Twitter, and it's absolutely right. Why the heck is he fighting? Why is he? I mean, I realize that he got called out there, so he can't stand up. In terms of the fact that this guy can't stay healthy, he needs to pass on that fight. And then it wasn't even a big brawl.
It was so random.
Yeah.
It was just unbelievable. Like, you know, he came out and sort of even hit Cook hard. Like, it was almost at the end of the game. They were losing. Cook skated past the crease, and DiPietro sort of gave him a little bit of a shot. It was more or less nothing.
It was pretty innocuous.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, Brent Johnson skating down the length of the ice. And the ref is trying to stop Johnson, and Johnson skates past the ref.
Yeah.
And it's like they were just, like, joking around. It's like it was a predetermined fight or
DiPietro
something.
Yeah, DiPietro was laughing, kind of.
Yeah. For the record, Tiffany Amber Thiessen is 36 years old, turning 37 this year.
See?
So I was only a couple of years off. She was born in 75. That's not that far off.
Yeah.
The funniest thing about the Rick DiPietro-Brent Johnson fight was how ridiculous DiPietro looked, not only during the fight, but after he got knocked over. And then the way Brent Johnson kind of, you know, was worried about him and tapping him on the shoulder. I mean, the whole Tim Gleason, Nikolai Kuhlman incident from a week and a half ago was funny enough, with Kuhlman basically looking like he was, you know what those two incidents remind me of? It's like a 14-year-old fighting an 8-year-old in karate. You know what I mean? Like, why the 8-year-old?
Or when Kramer fought the kids in the karate class.
Exactly. Rick DiPietro, he shouldn't have been fighting because of his injury issues, but he shouldn't have been fighting if he wasn't going to take it seriously. I mean, the guy hasn't even had a full season in 5 years. I mean, I felt like embarrassed for him, and it was like Nikolai Kuhlman, the same reason, because Brent Johnson is bigger, and he was actually the one who wanted to fight, whereas DiPietro looked like he didn't want to fight. He just was like, oh, okay, I guess I'll fight.
What's interesting is Johnson really looked like he was sorry after he one-punched him.
And that's, you know, that's why are they fighting? That's just, why are they fighting to begin with? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Although, by watching 24/7, you realize the Pittsburgh fairly, I think they have the most majors in the NHL. They're a very physical team.
Yeah. Derek Englund.
In terms of, like, this team, you know, DiPietro, I think that the tweet that we got was that DiPietro, you know, the organization is a joke because DiPietro fought. No, the organization is a joke because he has a 15-year contract. That's why it's a joke.
Also, there's many other reasons why they're a joke, but that's a good start.
They have a cap hit again.
And you know what,
guys? Yashin for 4.75 this year. That's a joke.
They're paying to have their team broadcast on Hofstra Radio University.
That's a joke. Right, no, but you nailed it, though,
Scott Gordon.
It's all of these things, and it's the way they've managed his injury. I mean, DiPietro, how old is DiPietro now? 28? He was drafted in 2000? The guy's been in the league now for, not including the lockout, like 7 years or whatever. I mean, the coaching staff, the management, they have to be thinking like, we're still going to have DiPietro for 10 years.
Nothing like drafting a player based on his ability to play the puck and then having the NHL institute a rule that limits puck control by goaltenders.
Well, you know,
that's not their fault. But again, you don't draft a goalie based strictly on his ability to move the puck when you have Roberto Luongo.
Yeah. I think it was Mike Brophy on Twitter who said something along the lines of, I think Rick DiPietro is just barely hanging on to a job as an NHL goaltender at this point in time in his career.
There's still, you know, if his contract was 2 years and $4 million, there's probably 10 teams in the NHL at least who would take a chance on him to, you know, revitalize his career in a different market with a better environment, and he's got a lot of physical talent. Although the knees are obviously giving him trouble now.
And
but with the contract he has now, he's absolutely untradeable, and he's not going anywhere, and he's going to stay in that poisonous environment for a long period of time. It's unfortunate for him, but at the same time, where else would he have gotten $7 million he signed originally? He wouldn't have got that anywhere else. So, I mean, as much as it sucks for him, he's going to be a rich guy.
Richie, how much confidence?
Well, he already is a rich guy.
How much confidence are you showing in DiPietro by claiming Nabokov off of waivers. You know Dipietro's healthy now.
Well, if you're not,
what kind of confidence are you showing your goaltender by doing that?
Good question, Anthony. And another reason why they're a joke.
Well, we'll talk to Damian Cristadero about Mike Smith being put on waivers later on in the show. But isn't Mike Smith the kind of goaltender the Islanders should be interested in?
Yes, because
young, cheap.
He'll
play the puck.
He'll be able to give you more games than DiPietro. Because you have to think.
Well, DiPietro was never going to report to the New York Islanders.
DiPietro's. Sorry,
Nabokov was never going to report to the Islanders.
DiPietro is pretty much done with the Islanders. He might play another 5 to 10 games, but, I mean, they're not making the playoffs, so DiPietro's season is essentially done, out 4 to 6 weeks, right? He'll have 1 month of play left. So, yeah, you might as well bring in a guy that can split time with him next year. I'd be shocked if DiPietro played more than 50 games next year. I mean, he's...
In any year.
He's at this point, he's, you know, when you start hearing that guys are plagued, he's injury plagued in that... He comes back. When a guy starts coming back and gets injured every 2 weeks after
it's like Pascal Leclerc, is he? It's the same thing. It's unfortunate.
The Twitter debate about the state of the New York Islanders continues unabated at www.illegalcurve.com. And, of course, you can tweet us your opinions at illegalcurve. Are the New York Islanders a disgrace to the NHL? Moving on to...
They are a joke now.
No, they are.
We're not talking about past or future. We're talking about now.
I'm talking about now, and I agree now. But they're under disgrace to the NHL because they have to realize that they are in control of the ownership, the management. They're in control there. I mean,
and they're a disgrace.
I would think they're a disgrace. Everything you see about them, the way their organization runs from top to bottom,
right. firing Scott Gordon, getting rid of Chris Botta, limiting all. You know, it's just.
They are, but they don't. What I'm maybe saying is, I have hope that they don't have to be.
I don't have any hope under Charles Wang that this is going to improve.
None. Right. So maybe
none
new
whatsoever.
Owner. New owner.
Yeah.
Why
but
not?
He doesn't. I mean,
there's like 10 teams for sale. Why not? You know.
Yeah.
And nobody to buy them.
Yeah.
You know, that's the problem. Like any team in the NHL, you know, any of the bad teams in the NHL, quote unquote bad teams, and I mean, are all for sale. But there's nobody who wants to buy them because they see a lousy investment.
Drew, I would buy them if I had enough Wayne Gretzky rookie cards. I mean, I would.
Speaking of bad investments,
if I had like 50,000 Wayne Gretzky rookie cards, I don't know if that would equal $170 million, but
next.
Okay, thanks, Ezzy. That was helpful there. Peter Forsberg is feeling fatigued after his workouts with the Avalanche. His foot is continuing to bother him.
Well, I mean...
Is he going to play for the Avs?
Well, that's a long-standing issue, whether he'll play, you know, and the foot injury, excuse me. But the truth is, I mean, according to Adam Foote and according to Joe Sacco...
Was that a pun? His foot injury, Foote.
According to Adam Foote, Joe Sacco, you know, the people who obviously are in the know and have seen him practice, apparently he looks great at practice. So if he can tolerate the pain, the Avalanche are interested in signing him and want him in the lineup. And now he said he won't play this weekend. I still see him giving it a shot. Peter Forsberg on one foot's better than most NHL hockey players. It's really a matter of if he wants to through the pain. But I think the spot's there for him, the talent's there for him to at least be a power play contributor. And I see him being a positive influence. I don't see him being a distraction. I'm a big Forsberg backer, so...
Richie, don't you what happened here was Forsberg thought he would practice two or three times because he was feeling good, and then he thought he was going to get in. I think Forsberg is going to play, but I think Forsberg thought he was going to get into a game earlier. And I think all the
you thought it would be quicker than it's taken
so
far.
But I think it's still another week or 2 weeks away, but I think he will play. But I just think that, you know what I mean? Like, he was feeling good. He flew to Denver from Sweden. He thought, oh, I'm good to go. And then he realized, oh, you know, some of these lingering issues are still there.
It's like the Gretzky thing, though, right? He only wants to play at a certain level. Like, Forsberg can come back right now, you know, three weeks ago and played at a level that wasn't up to, you know, his expectations. But he's waiting to play at a level that's, you know, otherworldly.
But remember when we talked about it on the show a month ago when the news came out? He's still 37 years old. It's not like he's not in a position where... It's like Chris Chelios, where he was 46, and conditioning was never an issue with Chelios, and it hasn't really been with Forsberg. It's that he has kind of a problem that will never go away, this foot problem that he's had. Remember, he was trying on skates 2 years ago.
If the medical technology was there to fix his foot, it would have been done already. That's my fear, is that this isn't going to get any better. And if he starts playing legitimate minutes, even if he starts playing 10 to 15 minutes a game, his foot's only going to deteriorate.
Maybe, or his groin will as a result of compensating for the foot. You know, that's happened to him in the past.
That's my problem. Not my problem, because, I mean, look, I want Peter Forsberg playing NHL hockey as much as anybody else. But I don't see how it's going to happen that his foot's going to get any better than it currently is.
Does anybody in this room have an issue with him trying it out?
No, not whatsoever. And I don't have any issue with the Avalanche giving him an attempt to do it either. You know, you sign him for nothing. and you let him keep going. And I mean, he's Peter Forsberg, for God's sakes. You know, Remus can put some clips up, and you'll see why they want to give him the shot. Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to touch on the Hockey Night in Canada NHLPA player poll that was released on the All-Star weekend. Maybe we'll get to some of the ownership moves in the NHL if we have time. Lots still to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday morning, 9:30 here on Sports Radio 1290. Lots of ownership activities in the NHL this week. Ezzy, your Devils, unless you've officially jumped off the bandwagon. Are you back on now? It's hard to keep track of your jumping on and off of the Devils bandwagon.
Okay. No. It's not a question of me jumping or on or off the Devils bandwagon. It's just I've basically ignored this season.
Oh, okay.
You know what, Drew? To be honest with you, I'm happy that the Devils are playing better. They didn't play very well last night against the Panthers. They had a 3-2 lead late, but they didn't play very well.
Right.
I'm always going to be a Devils fan, but as far as, you know, my interest as a fan in the NHL this year, I would have to say that I may be pulling for the Flyers. I'm on the Flyers bandwagon. But as far as my pick goes, my pick was Lightning and Kings in the final, so I have to stick with that. So maybe I'm kind of on the Lightning bandwagon.
Do you have any thoughts about the fact that minority partner to the team, Brick City, are thinking of selling the team? I mean, it came out that Jeff Vanderbeek, majority owner, was looking to sell the team, but then that report was repealed, and it's now Brick City, the minority partner, looking to sell their stake in the Devils.
You know what's funny about this? You know, first off, the report was it in the New Yorker?
No, it was in Bloomberg.
Bloomberg News Network. It came out of New York, obviously, because it has to do with New Jersey. But the original report, Richie, was that Vanderbeek was about to sell the team. But it's when I read it, Brick City... You know, like the rapper Redman out of New Jersey, his album was Brick City. Like, but the Devils. I didn't see.
But look at the organization. I didn't see it coming.
But this isn't good news because it has a lot to do with how they've performed this year.
No, it's not. It's, you know, you have a new arena. Obviously, you have a new arena there, and you're getting the money from WFA, and you're getting money from MSG Fox. You know, to broadcast your games. But at the end of the day, when you can't sell out games, and you have poor attendance, poor paid attendance, when you can't sell out playoff games, and when you know, your arena is a little bit farther away from maybe some of the base that you're trying to draw from, especially from, you know, if you're trying to get some people from New York City, although obviously the Rangers are the draw there. Then, you know, there's a lot of issues in terms of this team's success. And remember that all the years that they were, you know, successful and they really haven't been that successful since the lockout. The years before that, sure, it was in a cap-free league, but they didn't spend as much as some of the top teams, and were able to make runs to the playoffs through the playoffs every year that were able to make them money. Now I think that this team can get out of the first round, and with that problem, I don't know how they make any money.
They can't get into the first round.
I'm almost 100% sure that they're in a market that such that doesn't allow for them to receive any revenue sharing money.
I think
the Islanders have that same issue, is that they're in a market too big, so they're exempt from getting revenue sharing money. I'm not 100% sure about that, but I'm pretty sure.
Well, continuing on with the New York Islanders, because that seems to be the topic of the day for the first at least hour of this program, we're going to move to the Hockey Night in Canada NHLPA player poll that was conducted over the All-Star weekend. It's sort of an interesting poll. They got, you know, enough of a response that I can throw some legitimacy into this poll. The first question will deal with which team would you least like to play on? To no one's surprise, at least in this studio, the New York Islanders won that one at 27%. Surprising to me was number two, and
yes,
I think is the Edmonton Oilers at 20% of NHL player respondents said that they would not want to play on the Oilers. Is that a function of the city itself, or could it be the media? Because the media is a lot worse in Toronto or Montreal. Is that just players don't want to play in Edmonton?
City is a factor, but also winning is a factor, guys. They haven't been a good team for a while now, and they're rebuilding. So that's a huge factor. I think sometimes we read into these NHL players as being a little bit sharper than they are, as the later on questions will demonstrate. But, you know, the Islanders are number one because they don't run the franchise like a National Hockey League franchise. You know, Buffalo and Edmonton are maybe cities. Buffalo's third. Cities that people maybe...
But there's a huge drop between it. I mean, Islanders 27%, Edmonton at 20, and then it dips down to Buffalo at 8%.
In 3 years, when Hall's, you know, really getting going, and Eberle and Omark and all those guys are really getting going, hopefully, you know, for the team, they dropped a nice defenseman this year, and they're moving forward with a really nice young core, that'll drop probably to 10%. And so I think a lot of it's a product of the results on the ice.
It's interesting. Toronto and Montreal came in at number in the fifth spot. They're both at 5%. That, to me, is just they don't want the players. 5% of the players can't handle the media.
Yeah, they don't want the pressure. I mean, if you want the pressure, that's the you know, Burke and Gauthier have to do their due diligence. If these guys, you know, a guy like Camilleri and likes it. He likes the pressure. Look at him. He signed with Montreal. He took what came with that signing. He took the media spotlight and he flourished. And he was unbelievable last year in the playoffs. And he's been a player that's willing to, you know, to engage the French and English media. If you don't want to do that, you know, you still be a great player, but you might not be a great player in Montreal and Toronto. And that's something they have to do before signing. They have to really look into the psyche of the player.
Moving on to the flip side to that question, what team would you most like to play on? Detroit came in ahead of that one at 14%, and then the second place was a tie between the Vancouver Canucks and the Chicago Blackhawks at 11%.
Ezzy, let me throw this to you. Detroit as a city. Clearly results matter, because I've been to Detroit. You ain't going to Detroit for the scenery.
8 Mile.
No.
How are those, like, as far as the CBC NHL poll goes, I didn't like any of this, by the way. I thought a lot of it was useless. It's my opinion.
Do you want to expand on that?
I don't need a poll to tell me Sidney Crosby's a smart player. I know he's a smart player.
That's fair.
I don't need a poll to tell me. I don't need a poll to tell me Pavel Datsyuk is the hardest player to take the puck off of. I know that.
You see, I thought Crosby would have won that one.
Well, he was second. But the Edmonton Oilers, the New York Islanders, I'm going back to the last poll.
Okay.
You're talking about the dynasties of the 80s. The players don't want to play on the.
It's been 30 years.
Two of.
It's been 25 years. Mm-hmm.
They're still storied franchises.
Doesn't matter. It's been 30 years.
I understand your point.
Hold on. So you're
there,
saying you're saying that if you're an NHL player, you wouldn't want to play in Edmonton or Edmonton.
25 years since their last glory.
Edmonton, yes.
Edmonton doesn't bother me as much. I'm surprised Edmonton had a 20% response.
I'm not arguing.
But I don't care that the New York Islanders were a dynasty in the late 70s and early 80s. Why do I care about that?
Third, fourth, and fifth, Montreal and Toronto?
Well, that's just players who can't handle pressure.
Right.
That's guys who are not do not have the intestinal fortitude to handle playing with the spotlight right on you. That's fine.
It's funny because players in Toronto get a free pass anyways. They don't get
it. It's the management who gets the grief. Unless you're Chris Versteeg's car, but we'll talk about that in rapid fire later on.
Florida, Phoenix, those teams should be on the last poll. Not Toronto. Like, I mean, come on.
I said a lot about them that they didn't pick Phoenix as a place they least like to play when there's 3,000 people in the stands and nobody cares.
Because
the players like no pressure.
Nobody cares. They get the golf all year round. I mean, if you know, there's a reason. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. Which Canadian city deserves an NHL franchise? Quebec City, Hamilton, Toronto, or Winnipeg?
Exactly. And the Quebec City beat Winnipeg out? Like, I mean, come on.
You know why Quebec City?
They don't have a new arena.
French players voting.
It's French players voting. And Quebec City, you know, I'm sure this is going to come as a shock to all our listeners here in Winnipeg. Quebec City has a better nightlife than we do in Winnipeg. Now, granted,
what are you talking about?
Quebec
Drew?
City does have a better nightlife if you ask NHL players. Now, if they come back to the city and they go to Earls on Main every now and then, that might change.
Drew, you're
the
not
players...
seriously.
No, but Eddie,
that nightlife is
Eddie, absolutely. Most of these players won't play there. They just want to go party there. It's like players, you know, going to Toronto and the NBA. They like to go there because they like to party.
That's right. Quebec City
You guys are watching too.
Or as Jason Whitlock calls it, White Vegas.
You're watching too much Entertainment Tonight Canada, and you're reading too many, you know, party blogs.
He's exactly right, first of all. Second of all, there's a lot of French players, Ezzy, that are voting on this, so they're
going
to vote
for the French players going to prefer to play. Yeah. And the reason why, I mean, I was surprised. I mean, the reason
so you're
why
telling
Quebec's...
me that Quebec City, without a new arena, the reason why they receive more votes is a part of it is because Quebec City has a better nightlife.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
100%. For a guy who's coming off a game and who doesn't really, you know... He wants the party.
I've heard good things about Flea Whiskey's Alive and Mystique. I don't know what you're talking about.
If there's
about.
A place that they want to visit, if you took a poll of, I don't think they asked that question, where you'd like to, you know, play the most and visit, these guys all love playing in Montreal.
They love the party.
It's a crazy party city.
Think about it.
Whiskey
Dicks.
Did I say Flea Whiskey's or Whiskey Dicks?
You said Flea Whiskey's, which is a little odd.
Whiskey Dicks.
Okay. Anyways, but if you look at Quebec City and you look at Winnipeg, I mean, assume both of them have brand new arenas at that point.
But they don't have a new
Quebec
arena.
Quebec City, the only
Why
chance,
would I assume they have one when they don't?
Because the only chance...
Fair, that's fair.
That's fine. But the only chance Quebec City is going to have of getting a team back is to build a new arena. So they'll both be on an equal playing field at that point in time.
I'm not mad at you. I'm not mad at you. I'm mad at the poll because right now, right now, this poll is a reflection of the present time. A political poll, you don't ask, who would you like to be president in 2018 or whatever.
Well, they do if that's the question.
But Quebec City being voted number one without a new arena, to me, really eliminates the validity of this poll. I mean,
you know what eliminates the validity of this poll? Question. What player would you build a franchise around? Answer, 6%. Excuse me, in second place, Nicholas Lidstrom. He's 40. I'm supposed to take this poll seriously when these players vote Nicholas Lidstrom as the second best player to build a franchise around. He's 40.
He's got maybe 2 years left.
I can't take this poll seriously. He's 40.
Passion.
I burst out laughing. I thought it was the funniest thing I've ever read. These players can't read.
But they know how to party, which is why they like to go to Quebec City.
So seriously, you have to take it with a grain of salt here.
Richie, I want
to
know how Drew is so current with the nightlife scene in Quebec City. I know you
like to party.
I know you used to live in Ottawa, but I mean, Whiskey Dicks, man. Whiskey Dicks is hot right now. Mystique, Republic. I mean, we don't have a bad nightlife. We've got the Pyramid, West End Cultural Center. We have a good nightlife here.
Are you a walking billboard right now for Winnipeg nightlife?
You're tripping me out a little bit, but, you know.
This segment brought to you by Tourism Winnipeg.
I do agree with you that Winnipeg's nightlife is improving. So when players came back to Winnipeg and played here, they might say, hey, whoa, Winnipeg's doing pretty good for itself. I can go out and party every night.
Stereo,
but
Room 720.
They know right now they can go to Quebec City and go and party. They don't need to learn
that
about
Winnipeg.
The
proportion of French players versus the proportion of Manitobans is more of a factor, in my mind, than the nightlife and partying.
Does Quebec City have an oral fixation social?
Commercial time.
That's the U of M dentistry social, for those who don't know. I never go, but apparently it's a hoot.
It's a good time.
Yeah, I believe you have your tickets for next year's social already, don't you, Richie? And you're not even a dentist.
Commercial time.
Commercial time, you're done here? Tim, can we get out a little bit early? Okay, we're going to get out a little bit early. When we come back, what are we talking about when we come back? We're going to go 6 things we learned this week. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 9:45 this morning. Join in on the conversation. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. Or come join the live chat taking place at www.illegalcurve.com. And maybe we'll even take some of your phone calls, 780-1290, 780-1290. You can get in on whatever's on your mind in the hockey world.
Open the lines.
Also, Drew Mandel's on LinkedIn, so look him up.
You are on LinkedIn, aren't you, Drew?
Years ago, I set up a profile, and I never actually go on there, but if enough people, you know, they try and encourage me, I could maybe revive my profile.
You could eat.
I can always eat. You know that.
Apparently, LinkedIn is the new Twitter.
Like,
seriously,
Twitter.
LinkedIn is going to be really big as far as networking and stuff goes.
Yeah, bigger than MySpace?
I don't know. Apparently, MySpace is actually... we can move on here, but apparently, MySpace is actually still pretty...
Big in California.
Pretty popular, right? Yeah.
Big for bands.
Like, millions of people still use MySpace, which is shocking.
I thought they cut a lot of their work staff also.
It's definitely shrunk.
Sorry, I didn't read the Financial Post this morning, Drew.
Didn't read it this morning. This is old news. Come on. You said you were bringing the ruckus. I want you to bring the ruckus.
6 things we learned this week.
6 things we learned this week.
Or not.
6 things we learned this week.
Ezzy, we'll start with you on 6 things this week. Professional hockey players with injury issues and no experience in fighting should leave the fighting to players on their team better suited to fisticuffs.
We talked about this in the second segment, but... You know, I'm just going to echo our previous sentiments. I mean, Rick DiPietro had absolutely no place fighting in that game. And, I mean, regardless if he's had a fighting major before in his career, at this point in his career, especially considering there was nothing at stake in that game either. You know, and don't get me wrong, I'm very pro-fighting in the NHL. I think you leave it to the players who know how to fight, though. Perfect example. In 2004, when Jerome Iginla and Vincent LeCavalier fought, those are two guys that usually don't fight, even though Iggy, since then, really has fought more, let's be honest. But that had a place because you were in the playoffs, and both of those guys have fought before and are fighters. But the examples earlier this year, I mean, Pavel Datsyuk...
That was entertaining, actually.
There was no need for him to fight. And regardless of if there's a need, they just shouldn't be, because the thing that's happening with these guys, like Nikolai Kuhlman, is that because they can't fight and they're not ready for it, they're suffering injuries. And even though Kuhlman didn't have a major injury, I mean, you have to know what you're doing. Anyone that's played hockey before knows that fighting Fighting on skates and with equipment on is really hard. Fighting in general is there's a skill to it.
Kulaman could have been DiPietro. You're right, is he?
Right.
Absolutely.
And,
I mean, he broke his nose, but I mean, it could have been a lot worse. You're absolutely
and,
right.
And just one, you know, the most recent example. Obviously, we're going to talk about this later, but the Boston-Dallas game, three fights in the first 5 seconds or whatever.
Yeah, it was old 1970s style.
That was because of last year, because of the Gregory Campbell last year on Florida. That's what it would stem back from.
I was wondering what these guys haven't. Like, Boston and Dallas don't play each other, you know.
Because revenge from Gregory Campbell from Florida last year.
Really?
Yeah.
But
Remus will put up the clip on.
But he was on the ice to start that game, so I think they must have known.
First fight.
They must have known it was gonna start off that way.
It was him and Steve Ott. I believe Ott ran him last year.
Yeah.
And so this was the revenge, or he ran whatever it was. I forget exactly.
Doesn't matter. But it was very random.
But
you know.
But out of those fights, though, Richie. You knew that Steve Ott and Gregory Campbell were going to fight, and Steve Ott cleaned him out.
All the guys on the ice during that line brawl, which, it was more or less a line brawl when you got three fights in a row within the first 4 seconds. All those guys knew how to, knew what they were doing, so your point is well
taken.
Steve
Ott is a fighter. Yeah. He can, and Gregory Campbell, good for him, but he had no chance. But as far as Chris Barch and Sean Thornton goes, those guys are fighters, but the other guy that had no place fighting is Sutherby. I mean, McQuaid is a guy that has Adam McQuaid's getting a reputation around the NHL for a fighter.
Sutherby's a big boy, though.
Right, but he's one of those guys I imagine a lot of hockey fans have already seen the highlights of all of those fights.
Now, interesting,
Sutherby. I mean, he wasn't even close. I mean, it was like you just shouldn't fight when you know there's a good chance you're going to get knocked out.
There's a macho level to that. You know, watch 24/7. It's all about being macho.
That's right. Richard, Keith Yandel is a very good young defenseman, but needs to improve on the defensive side prior to becoming one of the top defensemen in the NHL.
People are anointing him close to the top defenseman. I really like Keith Yandel's game. He's a terrific skater, good puck mover. Actually, leading the National Hockey League for defenseman in points right now with 45. But there's one issue that he's leading his team in scoring. The one issue there, he plays 24 minutes a game, but he still lacks defensively a bit. And you can see that in his, the fact that he doesn't still play against the other team's players all the time. A significant portion of that goes to Derek Morris and Ed Jovanovski, combined now with the fact that he plays limited time on the penalty kill. And there's clearly some issues still on the defensive end. In terms of offensively, he's a terrific player. But you know what? The truth is, Drew, the reason he's come to this level and even played 24 minutes a game is because he's improved his defensive game, because he always had the offensive game. I once spoke to a Toronto scout about him, and I was watching. This is when he was in the AHL, and we were both discussing the fact that questioning his defensive side of the game, and the scout said to me, he wasn't sure if Yandel had the defensive acumen to be able to make it to the next level, and he's done that. So he's proved people wrong, and proved me wrong, and he's played very well, but he still has some growth. Room to grow defensively, and he's not yet one of those top number one defensemen who people talk about as an all around
shutdown
every kind of situation guy. So as
similar
as
to Mike Green,
yeah, exactly.
Because he's missing the defensive aspect.
That's
I wonder if he'll get a Norris. I mean, he's got 45 points, right?
Right.
I wonder if he'll get the Norris nod just because of his numbers.
To me, you can't. That's why, because you're not playing both
this
sides.
This year, it's Nicklas Lidström's Norris Trophy.
I agree.
Right now.
Oh yeah, but I'm just saying. Like, yeah, I wonder if Yandel will get one of the three.
He can.
Nominations.
If he's a top flight offensive defenseman, he needs to get to be a B+.
Green's been nominated and hasn't been a B+. So,
I know. But he's never won.
Right, but I'm saying
at some point in time, the Norris Trophy voters will not overlook your defensive liabilities.
And Green ain't getting a nod this year.
No, he's not.
His numbers are way down.
Ezzy, 2011 is the year of the 40-plus-year-old in the NHL.
Not 2011?
Sure, 2011. It's year.
You're saying 2011. I like 2000 anyways. Not that 40-year-olds haven't done, amazing things in the NHL in the past. But this year, I think what it is you're seeing 40-year-olds playing at an extremely high level, at the highest level, meaning that not only are they still producing, but they are producing at levels that maybe you wouldn't expect. Nicklas Lidström, for instance,
it's true,
took a step back last year. His numbers were a little bit down. He was still unbelievable.
But amazing.
But last year was probably his worst year ever. Last year, Nicklas Lidström.
In at least 15 years. Yeah,
and
probably.
People thought he was taking. People thought he was regressing, and he's turned it back on this year.
Look at the four, and this isn't new. I mean, no, I'm not picking up on something, but look at these four players, okay, that are all over 40, and they're all playing at a ridiculously high level. You've got the aforementioned Lidström, Teemu Selänne.
Yep.
Who I thought should have
been
in the All-Star game.
Been incredible.
Point per game.
Yeah.
You've got Dwayne Rolison, who has come to Tampa Bay, and I'm not sure if he played last night.
He did.
So he's, I believe, 8-4 in 12 games with three or four shutouts.
Yeah.
And then you've got, who am I missing here? Mark Recchi, yeah. who's 36 points 43. At 43 years old. So you've got four guys over the age of 40, and not only are they contributing, they're at the top of their team's scoring list, or in Rolison's case, you know, goaltending leader list. It's amazing. In my opinion, it's almost taken over the Sidney Crosby concussion issue as far as the biggest story this year, because I believe that in hockey, it's the only sport where you can do this. I mean, what other sport, like Gordie Howe was playing in his 50s?
Gretzky had a great point in the interview. Gordie Howe was playing in his 50s and he scored 20 goals.
Yeah, I know.
Or you got Chris Chelios. I mean, last year he played in the AHL. He was 45.
But your point is that these guys are actually being effective. I mean, Chris Chelios for the last few years was not even effective.
No,
these guys are playing at a very high level at such an old age. And I mean, I just think it's something special and unique about hockey, and it's unreal. It's great to see.
Richard, the All-Star game does have its positives, and one of them was that the shining spotlight was put on a player like Louis Erickson, who's an underrated talent most of the year.
He is, and I've talked about him on the show before, I believe. I mean, I'm a big Louis Erickson guy. I really like his game. He's not a big guy, but he's strong on the puck. He's a terrific skater. He's nifty, and he's able to find spots to score. And he uses his speed and his hockey sense to get into scoring positions, and he's got a terrific wrist shot. Now, obviously, some of his success is a byproduct of playing with Brad Richards and, to a lesser extent, James Neal. But he's one of the most underrated players in the National Hockey League, and I'm happy that a guy like that is able to garner the spotlight that he did on All-Star Weekend. And he was also voted, I think, a most underrated player in that poll we spoke about last segment. So that also brings attention to his
game. That was probably the only valid poll question.
Yeah.
That actually made sense. Louis Erickson and Patrick Sharp was on there.
Yeah.
Yeah, those guys are underrated.
That gives you good insight into what the players think.
There's some credence to that.
Yeah.
The rest of the questions, you know.
Ezra
Control-Alt-Delete.
Ezzy, Johan Franzen owes his linemates Todd Bertuzzi and Henrik Zetterberg much credit for his 5-goal game this past week.
Especially Hank Zetterberg. That's right, I called him Hank.
Are you guys that close?
I called him Hank.
Yeah.
Your boy?
Actually, and he just tweeted us. He said, please don't call me Hank ever again.
Well, you know, the Mule had a great game. First 5-goal game since Gabrick back in December of 07. And, you know, good for him. But Franzen is such a beneficiary of the line mates that he plays with. And like I said, mainly Zetterberg. Bertuzzi is obviously a nice fit there. But in that game, one of those goals, it was Franzen's second goal. It was just a lightning quick pass to Franzen. Franzen was cutting through them. Obviously, the empty netter was
great shot.
Assisted by Zetterberg. But three of those goals were assisted by Zetterberg and were because he creates room for him and just knows. You know, one of those questions on the CBC poll was, who's the smartest player? And Zetterberg was up there. And I think he should have been one over Crosby even.
And
Zetterberg is the smartest.
No, I mean, you could put Zetterberg also with Bertuzzi, a guy who's poor defensively, although he's gotten better. Yeah. Because he's so smart, he can make up for those deficiencies.
Richard, final thing we learned this week. At what point is the same old going to be enough in Nashville?
You know what, Drew? I mean, like,
is Nashville in fourth place right now?
But that's fine, Anthony. They're going to lose in 6 games, as Drew said. Oh, they might win a round. How much is enough enough?
Right now they play San Jose. Anybody think San Jose wouldn't beat Nashville in a series?
No, exactly. I think that San Jose beat Nashville. And, there are rumors that Weber wants out. But we had Josh Cooper on the show last week. The fact is, this team is a serviceable team. It can beat bad teams. It can be a good, reliable team all through the year and beat some good teams. Don't get me wrong. But at what point are you going to, you know, continue to play the same level all, you know, for years and years and years? Or are you going to kind of do what the Toronto Blue Jays are doing in baseball and kind of just try and make it, you know, the big time? And that's the biggest problem with Nashville is that they paid money to guys like Dumont and Leguan and Irat. They've made amazing decisions in terms of drafting and developing defensemen. But they don't get enough criticism for signing their players. We talked about this on the show when we were on Kick, to bloated contracts that don't justify the production. And that's the issue. And at what point is this team going to just say, enough's enough, we want to be a great team, not a pretty good team, moving forward and always being, you know, 6th, 7th, 8th and losing in the first round? Is management going to make that decision? How are you, a fan of that team, after a while going to think, you know, when can we actually make a run? The point is to win the cup. The point isn't just to be consistently good. The point is to be consistently good and have a chance to win the cup. I don't think that they have a realistic chance to win the cup. And at what point are their fans going to say, hey, if they haven't already, although their attendance is up.
Yeah.
At what point are they going to say, hey, you know,
we want more. Yeah. We want more than just a 4th or 5th and first round exit in 6 games.
And watch
the question is, have they ever had a top flight forward?
No, of course, because they had their run when they had Vokunin, Net, and they had Forsberg up there, and they had Kariya up there. They were loaded, and they lost to San Jose, and I think it was in five or six games that year, and that was really their one shot.
So, I mean, they've never developed a top, they've never drafted and developed a top flight forward.
That's fair.
Well, David Langwan has never reached top flight.
Look,
he was their first ever pick.
I know, they thought it was going to be him, but he never reached.
He lacks
no, they haven't. Yeah. They haven't.
It's amazing that in this many years, they've never developed a top flight.
Colin Wilson is their best shot, and he's got the talent to be that. But, I mean, one in, you know,
they found, they've always signed or found good goalies, but their track record is drafting and producing very good defensemen.
That's right. Ryan Ellis is coming up through the system. Yeah. So, I mean, they have good young players. But
they need a top. They don't even need a top six or a top nine. They need a top three.
That is a good point. A good point by Richie, though, because they obviously have salary cap issues. They spend at the floor, but they have to find a way to rework the model.
Yeah.
Because if they're going to continue to do that, which they will,
they don't even spend the floor. They only have 9 million in cap space, so they're at 50 million. They're ahead of Phoenix, Carolina, Tampa, St. Louis, Edmonton, Colorado, Atlanta, New York.
Maybe let Weber go and then, you know, use that money to forward.
But then you're done. I mean,
you can't let as soon as you lose one of your top flight defensemen, and unless you're replacing with two top, you know, three or top six forwards, you've screwed up your entire team, and that's the problem. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to start on NHL news and notes. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Much more still to come. You're listening to Sports Radio 1290. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. You're listening to Sports Radio 1290, and this is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Still to come on the program this morning, Damian Cristadero of the St. Petersburg Times, Randy Hahn, play-by-play voice of the San Jose Sharks, NHL Senior Vice President of Hockey Operations, Chris King, and our final guest, Jim Fox, lead analyst for the LA Kings television broadcast.
Forget that. We got Michael Remus in studio.
Michael Remus of the Art Desk. What is happening in the Illegal Curve chat room and on Twitter so far this morning?
Oh, well, guys, we've had a great debate this morning about whether or not the Islanders are a joke. Tweet us your thoughts for that at Illegal Curve. We've got some great action going on in the chat room. You know, any video, any article that we mention on the show, I'll post in there, post it on Twitter. You know, if you missed the first hour of the show, you'll want to catch it on illegalcurve.com. We'll post it on there. Or alternatively, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, itunes.com, search for Illegal Curve, or click the iTunes link at illegalcurve.com. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Michael Remus.
Yeah, baby, yeah!
Excellent. There you go. Michael Remus is heading back in to
NHL
operate the
news
art desk.
And
always
notes.
Good to have Michael Remus on the program this morning.
Sweet, I get my spot back.
Yeah, as you temporarily gave up your chair. That was nice of you. Timmy, are we ready for news and notes? Excellent. It's time for NHL news and notes.
NHL news and notes.
There you go. Better late than never. Let's start with the red hot Calgary Flames. 8-1-1 in their last 10. Winners of 6 in a row. Is this going to be a futile charge for to nothingness, or are they going to turn it on enough to make some sort of run into the playoffs?
You have to be conflicted if you're a Flames fan at this point, don't you?
I would think so.
I mean, you really want them to probably, you know, rebuild and turn and just try and, you know, tear this thing apart and then build it back up. At the same time, when your team's winning like this, it's hard not to get into it, right? I mean, you look at the conferences right now, and Calgary is, I mean, you can look at it two ways, guys, and there's always a couple ways to look at it. You know, this team is 5 points out of 14th. This is the new NHL, and it really is. They're 5 points out of 14th, or they're 3 points out of 4th.
If you were to ask me, I would say they're closer to being 5 points out of 14th.
I agree in terms of the construction of their franchise, but at the same time, you look at them versus Nashville, and you say, what's the big difference? In reality, what's the big difference? Nashville's fourth.
Yeah.
Now teams like San Jose and Chicago and L.A., I think, are going to slowly move up. But is there a big difference between Calgary and Nashville, Calgary and Anaheim, Calgary and Minnesota, Calgary and Phoenix, Calgary and Colorado, Calgary and St. Louis? I mean, yeah, obviously, you know, overall, in terms of long term, yes, a lot of those teams have a lot more young talent than does the Flames. Having said that, I mean, if you're in a 1 year vacuum right now, what do you do? Again, I would probably err towards rebuilding if you could. But, you know, if you're Jay Feaster and there's no market for what you have, you don't want to just sell places for nothing. So if there's no market for what you have and your team's riding high, I wouldn't buy. You have to ride out.
Well, I mean, that's the conundrum that he's facing. I mean, we're just over 3 weeks away from the trade deadline, and of course, we will be on the air from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. on that Monday, February 28th, with the Illegal Curve trade deadline special. You know, we'll wrap all the trades on that afternoon. But, you know, he's got this conundrum. If they are in an eighth or a seventh playoff spot at that point in time, you know, what does he do? I mean, he has a couple of interesting pieces that he could get rid of, and he should get rid of them. The question is, I mean, is the Calgary fan base, and I think they are, is the Calgary fan base smart enough to see this team for what it actually is?
I think so, and I think they are. But you know, we put it as my sixth, you know, one of the things we learned last week, Brent Sutter, done a hell of a job. He's a great coach.
Since Daryl Sutter was fired, the air is easier to breathe.
Absolutely.
It seems like that was a, I mean, remember last year when the Flames made the Phaneuf trade, nothing really improved. I mean, that was a huge move last year.
Right.
You know, was it a six-player deal, five-player deal?
I think six.
But firing Sutter, I mean, it just made everything better. And I mean, you know, on the TSN quiz, I believe Wednesday night, you know, the one of the questions was, what's the reason for the Flames playing better? And Bob McKenzie picked the Sutter firing because he said that was kind of like, you know,
it was like a cloud was lifted off the organization.
Right, it was
absolutely
our cloud.
I agree with that. And I think also in terms of Brent Sutter himself, as the tension between the two of them, clearly apparently not speaking, Brent has been able to kind of run his own show. And I think Jay Feaster is smart to realize, hey, I got a good coach here. I got a really good coach.
Yeah.
I mean,
and let him coach now. Because it sounds like Daryl Sutter wasn't letting him do his thing.
Tried to fire him, apparently.
Which is mind-boggling that you can, first of all, try and fire your own brother. I wouldn't want to sit around for Thanksgiving dinner around that table now.
It's just business as far as that goes, though.
I don't think that. You bring him in to be the savior, and you're going to try and fire him after saddling him with a terrible lineup?
You have to hope, though, the Drew, and you have to expect that, you know, I mean, a move is a move. You got to fire your brother. I mean, you can't look at him like a brother, right?
Well, then...
I think as far as, you know, what the Calgary Flames will do at the deadline, based on where they are in the standings, applies to so many teams. I think it's just...
That's very true.
What's happening in the West, especially, is just weird. It's not weird that there's parity. It's just weird how teams are moving up and down the standings with streaks. It's not like a team is slowly chipping away and climbing up the standings. What's happening, it seems like, this year, is that a team wins six and then moves up five spots, and then a team moves down.
That's 3-point games.
I think it's not so much parity. I think it's that you just have a lot of streaky play this year.
To me, there's only five real teams, and you see that in four of the five have really good positive goal differentials.
That's right.
It's Chicago, L.A., Vancouver, Detroit. Those are the and then San Jose. San Jose's at a +4, but I think they'll mark up. They'll boost up there. But those are the only five teams I really think have a legitimate chance of making a sustainable run to the finals.
Moving on to the Boston Bruins-Dallas Stars game again. That was a newsworthy game this past week. Daniel Paille suspended 4 games for his hit to the head of Raymond Sawada of the Dallas Stars. Textbook blindside shot to the head.
Yep.
Was 4 games enough for you?
Well, it wasn't a Colin Campbell, right? Because it was a Gregory Campbell game, so Mike Murphy handled it. You know, Dean Lombardi didn't like it. was it 4 games enough? You know, I always err on the side of more games rather than less, but I think they're starting to, you know, hand down more games. And there's a chart on TSN that said, you know, originally these kind of hits would be fines, and slowly it's been 2, 3, now it's 4 games. Yeah, I like the progress. I like the idea of, and I like the fact, I think you just pointed out, that Ferentz called out his own teammate. Was it you who pointed out?
That's right. He said it was a bad hit.
That's right.
When you have teammates calling that, and I think that's going to be a tipping point. When your guys in your own dressing room are saying about the hits you're delivering, that's a bad hit. We don't want that.
Andrew Ferentz fought in that game, didn't he?
Yeah, I believe he did.
He actually didn't look that bad. He looked pretty good. He's another guy that doesn't fight.
But he's
very
a big
often.
PA presence, is he?
Yeah.
And respect in the locker room. So him saying that it acknowledges the fact that, hey, there's a problem here.
That's right. I think that's an important distinction. When the players themselves their own teammates are saying, you know, we don't like that. Do not do that. It's going to make a big difference. You know, to me, Bob McKenzie on Twitter said it very interesting. You know, these third and fourth line players now don't look for the puck. They don't look to play the puck. They look for the hit, first and foremost only. Because if you saw the clip there, and the clip is available at www.illegal.com, Paille did not have the puck anymore. He had lost the puck. The puck was there. Sorry, Sawada lost the puck. The puck was there for Paille to pick up and skate away with.
Funny,
but he went for the hit instead.
Paille is a guy who played World Juniors, played in Buffalo, I think he was a first-round pick, I think 20th or something overall. A big talent, and he never really turned out thus far. Now he's playing a lower line role. Maybe he's changed his game, and maybe that is it. Maybe McKenzie's exactly right about that.
But Richie, as far as the suspension goes, and I'm honestly not just taking the contrarian view. I realize that the last few weeks, me and you have been having arguments on air where I am just really taking the contrarian view, or just making an uneducated, statement.
20th overall.
As far as I'm concerned, as far as this suspension goes, I think it's definitely not enough. I think based on what happened with Sidney Crosby and what and how they messed up that situation, and the fact that Boston is involved again, Mark Savard, I mean, I think that they missed the boat again here. I think this should have been six games. Well, I think the new standard is six games.
That's fair.
I think it should have been six games, and I think they are just, I mean, we've talked about this not only this year, we've talked about this for the entire 2 years of the show, our issues with the league's disciplinary track record. I think that because this comes on the heels of Sidney Crosby's concussion issues and his hit to the head in the Winter Classic and the fact that it's involving the Boston Bruins, I think that they should have made more of a statement. And this is coming off of the All-Star break where they had meetings about what they're going to do with headshots going into the March meetings. I think that this is just another example, Drew.
I think what you're saying
you need to set more of an example
here. You're seeing what the NHL is doing is that they're incrementally ramping up the suspensions for hits to the head.
Right.
It used to be, when it first started with this rule, it was two games. And then maybe, yep. A quarter of the way through the season, it was three games. Now we're sort of halfway to three quarters of the way through the season, it's up to four games. And then maybe by the end of the year, it's five games. And at the beginning of next year, it's six games.
The only problem with that, of course, is that you've had enough infractions that they have to raise it. You know what I mean?
Of course.
You don't get to six unless you have two more infractions. That's the issue I have.
That's right. And they'll have those infractions because these guys haven't learned yet.
You're a little bit more reactionary. But at the same time,
I mean, they just haven't learned yet. We're right up against it, so we'll do a quick question, just a yes or no from both of you guys. There was a poll that came out about federal tax dollars being used to build pro sports arenas. 55% of all respondents were against the idea. Quickly, yes or no on using federal tax dollars to build professional sports arenas?
No.
That's a close poll, by the way. No.
It was like 55% pro, 25% against, and then it was like very strongly for and very strongly against.
We're
so
not,
it wasn't that close.
I mean, I'm
55% for?
Sorry, against. Yeah. Sorry, against.
I'm not against. I am very pro Quebec City getting an NHL team back one day and getting a new arena.
You want the federal government to spend $300 million?
You want your tax money going to that?
Hold on, no. And my answer was no, and it's because in Winnipeg we didn't get any federal money for the MTS Center, and if we did, it was very minimal.
Yeah, well, we did. I'd have to check. I think we got a small percent. Like the stadium at the U of M is getting some federal money, but the only reason it's getting federal money is because they're putting a public gym in there. That's where the federal money's going to. It's not going to the stadium itself.
That's to be for the university. Yeah.
That's right.
Provincial.
So there's a benefit there, but I mean, the problem really with the Quebec City plan is that it's so out of whack in terms of dollars.
It's federal funding for a professional arena. Let's be honest here.
And it's and they want $350 million for it.
Yeah, so these millionaires sure like to have free rent things built for them. Why don't you use your own money? What are you using the taxpayers' money for? Use your own money.
Phoenix.
Richard Pollock.
It's enough.
Chief spokesman for the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. Let's go to break. When we come back, statistically speaking, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back. Shortly after 10:15 in the morning, you heard what the nice commentator man said. Call in 780-1290. 780-1290, we want to hear what you have to say about your thoughts on the hockey world. If you're calling in from out of town, put a 204 in front of that and make it 204-780-1290.
I'd like to get some calls about what fans think of that CBC poll and, what they think of the issue of, which city should get a team about federal funding. I'd like to see some calls about that.
I'm not sure you're going to get a fair response if you're asking people in Winnipeg what Canadian city should get an NHL team.
We can get calls from outside of Winnipeg.
That's true.
It's called putting an area code in front of a number.
It costs a lot of money to make a long-distance call nowadays.
Skype? Skype is unbelievable. If you're not familiar with Skype, I mean, you can call anywhere for free. You can call Australia, Egypt.
I'm not sure if you're calling Egypt right now.
Anywhere.
Yeah, who are you calling in Egypt at the moment, Ezra?
I don't know. I'm just throwing places out. It could be New Zealand, anywhere. I'm just saying Skype allows you to call anywhere. China.
Aware. Right now you might be in China.
Good use of that sound effect, Tim. I deserve that.
Well done.
That was excellent. Yeah, that was well done. Anyway, Tim, it's time for... time
statistically speaking. You didn't throw him a bone there.
I keep forgetting to tell you about when the
there's no bumper for that.
Yeah, exactly. That's why you especially threw him under the bus.
Yeah, sorry. Anyways, we'll start with statistically speaking.
That felt like when Kramer gets the game show set, and he's like, okay, time for a commercial break, and there's nobody there. He's like, okay, Tim, cue up that sound effect. Tim's like, there is no sound effect.
Richard, defenseman like Chris Phillips. I don't even know what this English that you were trying to go with there, so maybe you can explain it to me. Is this
Pig
defenseman Chris Phillips has had better seasons but has also endured significantly bad luck with a 954 PDO?
Yeah, he's had better seasons.
Defenseman like Chris Phillips,
you know, there's a couple of defensemen like this, but he's had a bad season. But at the same time, also, you know, with his bad season has come a lot of bad luck. PDO is, you know, a combination of shooting percentage when on the ice and save percentage when on the ice, and generally it's around 1,000. I mean, that can change for certain players, but a 954 PDO is atrocious and means that he's had a fair amount of bad luck. So as poorly as he's played, I think everybody here knows he can be a useful player moving forward, and I think one of the main reasons for, you know, poor plus minuses and poor stats is the lack of luck he's had, especially in terms of the Senators' goaltending and the team's shooting percentage when he's on the ice.
I really hope Chris Phillips gets a good shot.
One of the good guys.
It looks like he'll be moved, probably.
I think so.
And
I agree.
I hope he gets a shot with a team. Like, like Chris Phillips deserves that.
Look in San Jose.
Yeah, San Jose. You know, it's funny. He came into the league right around when San Jose and Ottawa were both kind of expansion teams.
Mm-hmm.
So Chris Phillips, yeah, he's definitely been. He hasn't gotten the. He still plays big time minutes, but Ottawa. Wow.
Struggling. Still
struggling, though.
Yeah. Sorry, I was just... Damien Christodaro has developed a conflict, so we're trying to see if we can get him on later on in the program.
Okay,
so,
okay.
You know, that's what I was doing there, if you heard some typing going on.
No problem.
Marty Wiesner is winning draws at a 54.6% clip and could be a helpful addition to a cup contender. Also has 20 points so far this year.
He's in Florida right now. They're not likely to not make the playoffs. He's a guy who's, you know, obviously Edmonton fans know about him, you know, and his experience there. A guy who can win draws, 54.6% clip is significant, and you know you can add him to your fourth line if you want to. He can put him on for important draws. He can move the puck. You know, he's a pretty good skater. You can add a little bit offensively, although in limited time you're not going to rely on him too much for that. But he's the kind of guy who a team, you know, similar to Dominic Moore. Dominic Moore is a little bit better than Marty Wiesner, but you know he can have an effect on a playoff team, and I think he'd be a nice addition moving forward, especially because of that face-off percentage.
Where would you see him going? Possible destinations.
That's one of the guys who can go out of a lot of teams. Which team doesn't need a fourth line center?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, a guy who can win some draws. Yeah. I mean, it's just one of those valuable trades. The kind of guy who, you know, he gets traded for a third or a fourth round pick
or whatever it is.
And it doesn't make a lot of splash on the trade deadline day or before it, but it's one of those, just a tremendous acquisition that everybody needs.
Right, teams like San Jose and Vancouver and...
Doesn't Vancouver already have that guy, though?
Are already face-off proficient, so they don't need a guy like that because they have guys like Nickel and Kessler and Mahotra. But there are a bunch of teams that do need guys like that.
Okay. Atlanta is the only team in the NHL with a below 500 winning percentage when scoring first.
You know,
it used to be the mantra, you know, of course, being score first.
Well, the only team in the NHL that has below 500 winning percentage when scoring first. I mean, that's to me is shocking how you can be that poor in that regard. And actually, wrote an article by Atlanta. They've really tanked it. And the truth is the stats, you know, the numbers really weren't there for them to be playing as well as they were. And this is one of the reasons why. If you can't score first and protect a lead in the National Hockey League in this day and age, you know, Craig Ramsey is a defensive coach, so I'm surprised that this team has not been able to protect the lead as they should. Especially because they have a pretty good, you know, defensive core in terms of talent, offensively more than defensively, but still talent, and they can move the puck pretty well, and they have a pretty good goaltender. Obviously, the forwards' depth isn't where it's supposed to be, but surprised that a team like that Craig Ramsey's team can't protect a lead like that. I mean, that to be the worst team in the National Hockey League at, you know, holding that lead when you're up 1-0, or ending up winning the game when you're up 1-0, to me is a poor stat for them, and it's a reflection that. There's a lot still to be improved in Atlanta.
Let's look at Atlanta for a second. Right now they're in the eighth spot in the Eastern Conference. They're still hanging on. I mean, they've taken a nosedive.
They have taken a nosedive. They're clinging. Carolina is just waiting to take
Carolina's
over.
Carolina's 4-6 in their last 10, so it's not like they're tearing it up or anything. Atlanta's 2-5-3 in their last 10.
Yeah, but Drew, look at Carolina. Look at where Carolina was 2 months ago.
Well, I'm saying, do you think Carolina overtakes them?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I'm not sure if either of those teams make the playoffs, but I think Carolina is better.
I mean,
them.
One of those two teams has to make the playoffs. Who else is going to overtake them? I mean,
Carolina overtakes them. Does Carolina overtake them? Sure. I mean, I think it's a coin flip between those two teams. I should take that back. I think it's a coin flip between those two teams, but I think Buffalo is the best team that's right behind them.
You think it's Buffalo right now is 6 points behind the Lions for that final playoff spot?
I have to put fake money down. I'd put it on Buffalo.
Hold on. Let's put
teams.
It on the board. You take Buffalo. I'll take Carolina. Drew, who do you have?
Are the Islanders an option?
No.
Devils?
I'll take Buffalo. Remus, are you going to actually put it on the board this time, or are you going to forget?
Right now, Remus is thinking, what board?
Remus is like, I need a board first.
He's got a board. A word document.
Oh, a word document
word
board.
Doc.
I'll take Buffalo.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ezzy, who do you want? You want Carolina?
Yeah, I already took Carolina.
I know. I'm just confirming.
Yep.
Okay.
Now, Atlanta was my preseason pick to make the playoffs.
You can get in on this here. We can parlay.
Well, the truth of the matter is, it's not going to be Ottawa or Toronto, and it's not going to be Florida. So, I mean,
it's Carolina or Buffalo.
Carolina or Buffalo. But, I mean, if you look at their Buffalo just needs to score. But they can't. I mean, I think it's going to be Carolina myself because they seem to.
The Enstrom injury, guys, is monstrous.
For Atlanta.
It's huge.
2 to 4 weeks, yeah. Huge.
Bufflin's play tanks when he's not there, and he's the best defenseman. Let's call a spade a spade. Next stat.
Who are we calling a spade now? Tampa Bay is the only team in the NHL that is 500 when being scored on first.
Interesting stat. I mean, just explain that. No team in the NHL is... they're 500. The Tampa Bay Lightning's record when they allow the first goal is 500. No team in the NHL is 500. Every single team is below. So Tampa is showing an ability to adjust to the game situation. There's obviously some luck in there, but adjust to the game situation, be able to use that 1-3-1, and obviously have a ton of offensive talent. So they're not necessarily intimidated by allowing that first goal. And
if they get behind by a goal, it's not they're obviously showing that they can come back and still win the game.
Interesting stat. Sure. I thought it was funny that after last week in the stat, we mentioned that the Islanders hadn't won a game when they had been outshot. I'm watching the highlights this week, and Islanders won, and then the sportscaster says, and this is the first game all year the Islanders have won when outshooting the opposition.
There you go. So what you're seeing here is that we are ahead of the curve and or fortune tellers.
It could be, yeah.
That's the only reason that explains why Ezzy's carrying a crystal ball and dressed with a fancy scarf on his head right now.
It could be. I'll take that group compliment that you've just thrown at us, Drew.
Is that a Groupon?
I was just about to say. I thought Richie was about to say, I'm going to take that Groupon.
We actually need a good Groupon to go out after the show for a meal.
Next step.
About Groupons? No. Boston leads the NHL in 3-goal game wins, meaning they're blowing out their opponents.
Yeah, they're not winning, 1-goal games. If generally 1-goal games kind of go both ways. Now, there's obviously, it's been written about by Gabe Desjardins, who's...
On the show next week,
on the show next week, and he's going to be on the show moving forward, I should mention.
Ah.
For our Statistically Speaking segment, he's in place of these stats, and he'll be on next Saturday. He's going to be on the second Saturday of every month moving forward. We're very excited about that.
Which one of us is off?
Saturday? We got to get booted off.
Okay.
But, he's talked about that in terms of control. Baseball, they talk about the stats of one-run games. And obviously, hockey's a little bit different because you can control, you change your style of play a little bit more than baseball. But winning goals, winning games by at least 3 goals is an indicator that you're blowing out your opposition. And that's always a better thing than winning 1-goal games because that means you're controlling the pace more, you're controlling the game. And that's a good stat for Boston, which is the highest third period scoring team in the league, which we talked about 2 weeks ago, and I also heard that on a sports show this week.
Well, there you go. That's at Boston, of course, is my pick to represent the Eastern Conference. So, I mean, I just think that nobody's talking about them, which only bodes well for their playoff chances.
A lot of depth.
Yeah, a lot of depth. I mean, of course, injuries will factor in, but if they can stay healthy, they got two solid goaltenders. I mean, I know, I put too much stock in having two goaltenders come the playoff time.
Only one plays, but yeah.
Yeah, I know. But, right now, sort of solidly there in, 4 points up on Montreal for the division lead in the Northeast. Just, trudging along.
Yeah, just winning games.
Yeah, just winning games. When you win two-thirds of your games, you're just doing well.
When you're winning most games in the league by at least 3 goals.
That's right.
I think three or more.
That's a good stat that you just came up with there. And the final stat, and of course, just to sort of dig the knife in a little bit deeper onto the Toronto Maple Leafs, they've been shut out 8 times this season.
I don't know what to say here about this.
What a joke.
And a lot of those shutouts have been pretty bad. They've been 7-0, 8-0, so...
They're just that, you get shut out 8 times in the National Hockey League through, 55 games we're through? 52 games?
Yeah.
Eight times?
I'll tell you how many games they have.
Exactly. 8 times?
Toronto's played 51 games, so they're getting shut out in about,
just under 20% of the games,
Yeah,
right?
Come on. Sixth of the games.
Come on. I mean, you don't even have a chance. Who cares what your goalie does? You don't have a chance. I mean...
Good for James Reimer getting that shutout, though, this past week.
Yes, he played well.
Right now, he's their best goaltender.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody would have, nobody would ever thunk it, but right now he's their best their best goaltender. Anyways, let's go to break. We're still trying to track down Damian Cristadero, seeing if he's... what happened is the Lightning changed practice time on him.
Okay.
So right now we're trying to narrow it down, see if we can get him on a little bit later, but of course we got a jam-packed second half of the show. So we'll play it by ear. We'll see if we can get him on.
See what we can do.
Yeah, have our people talk to his people, that sort of thing. Let's go to break. When we come back, more from the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.